In the name of Allah, God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is but one God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. As a student of truth, you should know that I believe in Moses and the Torah. I believe in Jesus and the Gospel. I believe in Muhammad and the Holy Quran. And may the peace and blessings of the one God be upon all of his worthy servants. I'm especially thankful that Almighty God has brought us together this afternoon as a community to address matters of justice. I greet you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam, sir.
For those unfamiliar with these words, they simply mean, in English, peace be unto you. I think it was Gandhi who suggested that peace is not the absence of violence, but that peace is the presence of justice. And it is the call for justice that has gathered us together here in the city of Oakland for our regular weekly town hall meetings. And where there is no justice, people really cannot enjoy life, for there is no joy without justice. And of course, we are gathered specifically on the heels of the murder of our brother, Oscar Grant. And we pledged ourselves never to allow those that control media and politics to forget the suffering of our people and the murder of our brother. And so every week that we gather, not a week goes by that we're not introduced to some new matter of brutality and injustice. There's a conference that's being hosted this weekend by the National Black Law Enforcement Executives, a group known as NOBLE. I know I didn't get the phraseology right, but this group is gathered in Oakland, California today. In fact, hosted a town hall meeting for youth just a few hours ago in East Oakland. And when I discovered the conference, I discovered it through our sister who's a guest to share with us later this afternoon, Rashida Renaj. And when she told me that she was a presenter in the conference and told me where the conference was being hosted, which was 5 blocks from the mosque, man, I couldn't help myself.
Yes, sir.
I knew it being 5 blocks from the mosque and on Foothill, what excuse could I give for not being involved with a town hall? Can't you tell we love town halls around here? So when we discovered that there was this town hall, I decided I would look it up because I didn't know the logistics. I heard my sister say something of the Hilton Hotel, and I heard her say Fremont High School, so I decided I would search it out on the internet to discover that herein is this 3-day conference being hosted by black law enforcement executives from throughout what is called Region 6 of their national organization. And I don't know the full range of the region. I would imagine it entails all of California, all of Nevada, all of Oregon, all of Washington, these western parts of the United States of America being represented there by black law enforcement professionals, particularly executives from law enforcement gathered here in Oakland, California. When I printed out the flyer, it had a quote there from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who said that injustice anywhere, and you know the rest. What's the rest? It's a threat to justice everywhere. And so when I saw that, I said, well, I have to find a way to get acquainted with that organization locally. I was able to meet on yesterday the national president, and I shared with him some of our concerns, particularly in light of the murder of Brother Oscar. And I said to him, as he said to me, that in their organization, they want to learn how to think outside of the box and to work outside of the box. In fact, he said that NOBLE as an organization is really the originator of what people call community policing. I said, okay, well, good, brother. Officer, let's think outside the box. And I said to him, what if black law enforcement executives on January the 2nd, after seeing the video footage of what happened with Oscar Grant, stood up with strength and in unity. And even though they may not have been personally responsible for investigation, certainly long before they accepted a position in law enforcement, these are black men.
Come on.
I shared with him that I sat in the barbershop one day, and as I was getting my hair cut, the man in the chair next to me was a brother who was a BART police officer. And he said, don't tell anybody I told you. I didn't tell you who he is, so he's safe. And he began to run down the things that he thought went wrong on the platform on the evening that Brother Oscar was killed from the perspective of a police officer. Now, he's a black man. And in fact, I wasn't going to ask him anything. I just knew he was in the chair next to me. And he looked at me. He recognized me from the protest and said, aren't you going to ask me something? In other words, he wanted to tell what he thought was wrong, and that's good. And for that, we can all give him two big claps. Okay, that's just two. Because in truth, the black officers, including the national organization, after witnessing the murder of Oscar Grant, those not responsible for direct investigation have no stake in BART are free men. Because, and women. Because you work for law enforcement doesn't mean you're not free.
Hello?
It's not our First Amendment right, the right of free speech.
Yes, sir. Yes.
So there's no law that says if I'm a law enforcement officer that I cannot exercise freedom of speech.
Right.
They do it all the time. They do it against us more than they ought to do it for us. So when they start cussing you out, when they pull you out the car and slam you on the hood, some might say that's freedom of speech. I would say that's an abuse of power. But now my point here is that the black law enforcement professionals owe it to themselves, owe it to you. And since we're in church, let's state it, they owe it to God to stand and speak truth to power, even if they work for those in power. What stops a Texas officer from speaking about a murder he saw on TV out of California? What stops an SFPD officer from speaking about a murder he saw by BART PD? What stops an OPD officer from speaking about a murder they saw in San Leandro PD? See, the question becomes, what are they there for?
Right.
Are they there for justice, or are in fact law enforcement officers a gang? Now, I sat in a meeting the other day with sheriffs of Alameda County, black elected officials and clergy leadership. They brought a video and showed it to the group at a breakfast meeting and declared the great problem of gangs in the Bay Area, which of course heightens the concern of law enforcement officials when they engage young people out of fear that everybody that we're dealing with are members of gangs. But when they expressed in Santa Rita who the gangs were that they were concerned about, I was listening real attentively. Because we challenged them when they ran a raid over at Acorn called Operation Nutcracker and said that the 54 young men they arrested were the notorious Acorn gang. A few weeks ago, they did a similar raid in East Palo Alto and expressed that there was a black gang with a few black folk left in East Palo Alto and said that they were called the Taliban. Well, that's like saying Al-Qaeda. Now, when Attorney General Brown ran the raid over at Acorn, He called the fighting that is alleged to be taking place between young black men at Acorn and young black men right around the corner from here. He called their fighting one another asymmetrical warfare and described the young men as domestic terrorists. Now, granted, this is the same Jerry Brown that when he had a little place over here in Jack London and had a radio show called We the People, very frequently made statements like the war on drugs is a hoax. Jerry Brown talked. He said that the incarceration binge is not a result of an increase in crime. He said it's a result of a failure of capitalism. That's Jerry Brown talking. That's when he was earning his liberal stripes. He didn't have an attorney general's position. He wasn't pandering to the forces of police unions and prison guard lobbyists. He did not express at that point a desire to be governor of the state of California. So he spoke freely with the brilliance that people believe that he possesses. Jerry Brown is considered a genius by many.
Yeah.
He is. He's not George Bush.
No, he's not.
George Bush is not the sharpest needle in the haystack. They knew that when they elected him.
Yeah.
Jerry Brown, on the other hand, for years have been considered this eccentric type genius. I mean, he's one of the few mayors that I would see walk fearlessly his dog through the ghetto. Jerry Brown. And he'll walk right up on a mugging scene. In fact, I think someone charged him or accused him. He snatched a cell phone or something from a sister that had a fight or something, an argument. In other words, he's got courage. Jerry Brown does. You know, I know he has courage. After Operation Nutcracker, he agreed to meet with us. That was courageous. He didn't have to do that. And they shut down the state building. The lights went out while we were sitting there. He didn't get frightened. So he's not a fearful man. But he is a political man. And he told us that when he used that language that criminalized young people in West Oakland, that in essence he was pandering to the political forces that are driving the incarceration agenda. And said to us that if you can create a force equal to or near to or greater than the force that's driving my mouth in this dialogue, we challenged him and said, you ought to never again call these young people domestic terrorists. And he stayed silent for about a year. He kept his tongue for about a year. And while local law enforcement representatives, unfortunately, they ran out the black officers to say that Operation Nutcracker is soon to come to a neighborhood near you. You know that every black officer they ran out there have been demoted. So we want to say to the black officers, stand strong. Stand tall. Stand up, not for the cold blue line, but stand up first for your people who sent you to that position by the suffering that our people have endured. Now, these town hall meetings come with regularity because we've got a community that has been absent political power. The reason three strikes has meant 25 plus years generally for poor urban males has been because our political voices and concerns have not been heard and have not been respected. I don't know about you, but I'm tired of being disrespected. So that whensoever laws are crafted that find their way to criminalizing urban males, the reason that Oscar Grant was treated the way that he was treated, it had nothing to do personally with Oscar Grant. It had everything to do with the mindset of Johannes Mezley and every other officer on the platform that evening. What was that mindset? That mindset was that these young males are a threat. They were looking for a gang. They didn't know
who was who, because the young men they were looking at came from nearly every walk of life. They saw black men. They saw Latino men. They saw Asian Pacific Islanders. They thought that because we think that we're different, that these young men were at odds with one another, when in fact, these young men were friends and on board that train together as family. Those young men were better politically than most of us. But now we're coming into a new era. Many of us thinking ourselves to be minorities, when in fact we're not minorities.
No, sir.
Let me state that again.
That's right.
This is a play on language. It's an expression of power. Power is the ability to define reality and make other people respond to your definition as if it were their own. That's the way Dr. Nobles would say it. I think Huey would have said, power is the ability to define phenomena and have it act according to your will, or something of that effect. In other words, when we allow ourselves to think self to be a minority, whenever you've got minor, minor is only minor when you compare it to major.
Yeah.
So as soon as you call yourself minor, you're calling yourself less than. And the question becomes, are you less than somebody else? If you're an activist for justice, does that make you less than Bush and the boys? Our friend, Mr. Is it, I don't pronounce the name. Is it Eisman? Eisinger. He's a brilliant writer and activist, just returned from Iraq, standing against oppression for the people. Now, I would never think that George Bush and his friends and family could outthink this man.
Come on.
I take him every time. Now, George Bush may have gotten more votes for the presidency than Mr. Eisinger, but it's a no-brainer.
Yes.
I don't think George Bush could have written what Mr. Eisinger wrote. Still under occupation, Iraqi unions, fine. I don't think that George Bush could write this. In fact, I question whether or not Bush can write at all. I think he has speech writers. So now, my point here is that we're not minor because someone else gained more votes. Neither are we minor because somebody else told us they have more in number than we do. First and foremost, let's address actual facts. California is the first state in the country, after becoming the most powerful electoral college state in the country, California has more members in the House of Representatives than any other state in the country. California has the greatest potential to move the political picture of any state in the country. Now, in this state that has the greatest capacity to drive a political forum, you have those that have been called minorities are now actually the majority. So the majority population in the state of California is not Caucasian. Now, this doesn't mean that if you're Caucasian that you're a loser, because this is not about race, this is about right. But California's the first state. In fact, it's been that way for some time. If you just look at the largest school districts in California, LA School District, second largest school district, I believe, in the country. They've got so many children there that they're laying off, I think, 5,000 employees because of the budgetary crisis. But any district that can lay off 5,000 employees and still exist must be pretty huge. So the LA School District is larger than most cities. Y'all with me now?
Yes.
Now, its school district is maybe 10% white. In other words, this great state is populated by the people that had been disenfranchised in the country for decades. And it becomes advantageous to those that have wielded power not to to educate us in such way that we can become an empowered and an enfranchised people, but to miseducate us so that even if we have a degree, our degree is never used to serve the advancement of the cause of the people. This is just real. That being said, these town halls are designed to teach us what they unfortunately won't tell our children at Castlemont or at McClyman's or in the school system. It's designed to inform us of the facts that our students are not learning at Berkeley or San Francisco State in other places unless they join revolutionary groups to find out on their own. I'm in a class of many that can declare that I didn't really discover my blackness until I got to college. And somebody said, join the black student union. What? Huh? For what? And we get into a little room and folks start teaching us about the real conditions that our communities are suffering. Well, these town hall meetings are now designed to help sharpen us politically. I'm reading an article called The Need for Presidential Accountability by Dr. Ron Daniels. I find it in the new edition of the Final Call newspaper. It has on the cover President Obama's first 100 days. It's available for you if you'd like to read it for yourself. But our brother writes, politics is the process through which a group, community, or nation establishes its goals and objectives for survival and development. Every group should have a process for establishing and setting its agenda of interest, issues, and aspirations. Then the group must work, struggle, fight, and engage to acquire and maintain the power to implement its agenda. A few weeks ago, we took 1,000 or more of us to Sacramento because we're now crafting and forcing the implementation of a new agenda. All right. You should know that over the last week, we've met with Assemblyman Sondre Swanson and his staff to introduce him and them to the fact that there are new agenda writers here. We understand that there's a prison guard lobby. We know that there are police unions. And when we introduced through Assemblyman Amiano AB 312, it was made crystal clear who the opponents of justice are. It's the unions of law enforcement officers. Now imagine the union of the officers be the opponent of justice. That don't even make sense. That doesn't even make sense. And we should just say it like that. How do you say you stand for justice except that when you and your brothers in blue go wrong? What happened to a system of fair dealing? If law enforcement officers shoot somebody, they are allowed to go home and eat a burrito. You ever seen an offensive scene? Let me show you an offensive scene. Here's a homicide in a community. The streets are taped off. Yellow tape, white chalk. And law enforcement officer walks up eating donuts and a sandwich and sipping on coffee while our loved ones are bleeding on the street. See, that's a lack of sensitivity. Right here at Acorn or in Campbell Village, a mother lost her son 100 yards from her front door and the police came. They taped off the street. They chalked the ground. Eventually the coroner picked up her son. She was at the door of her home less than 100 yards from the murder scene. And not one officer came to her and said, ma'am, we need to share with you the news. We're upset to say, and it pains us to say, that your son has been murdered right here on the sidewalk. They didn't say nothing to her. They didn't even go to her and ask her.
Was your son involved with people that might want to do this to him? Did your son have known enemies? Did your son carry a weapon? Was your son involved in a lifestyle that might have brought harm on him? Is your son an innocent victim, or was he in the life that maybe they didn't say nothing to him? Maybe mama could have said, my son had a beef with so-and-so, why don't you go look into that? They left this mother to mourn the loss of her son without even issuing a decent investigation, a humane investigation. But if you'll notice, when certain animals are harmed, this is real. When Michael Vick was accused of biting dogs, they pulled all stops to catch the men responsible for harming dogs. Michael Vick went to jail and lost his career quickly. But when murders occur,
we don't have enough homicide officers.
You don't use the ones that you have. What do they really do? So few murders are resolved in the city of Oakland, it's as though there is no department of homicide. Look, sisters and brothers, we owe it to ourselves to learn the issues of our time and the duty and responsibility of law enforcement when these issues occur. Now, among the things that we're very clear about is that not only are there too many murders in our streets on the first place, too few homicides solved in the second place, but also we are victimized as victims by the brutality of those that are paid to enforce the law equally. We are being robbed of our constitutional rights. We should know that. The Constitution entitles you, if you are a citizen, to equal protection under the law. Now, I shouldn't have to declare if we are a citizen. But by the way Brother Oscar was killed, he wasn't treated as a citizen. He was treated as an enemy combatant. That's why we took issue with Jerry Brown when he called our young people domestic terrorists. Because that opens the door to the treatment of people as less than human. You be careful when you watch on television, hear on the radio, and they make allegations against young people that dehumanizes them. That's why when they raided East Palo Alto and they called the young men the Taliban gang, or when they came to Acorn and said, this is the notorious Acorn gang. In June of that year, Oakland was not known for black gangs. By the end of July that year, Oakland had the notorious asymmetrical warfare fighting Acorn gang. But when the sheriff's department reported to the black electives 3 days ago, he came with a report from Santa Rita Jail saying we have a gang problem. He showed a film clip, and the only gangs that presented a problem there are our Latino brothers, the Norteños, the Sereños, and the Border brothers. I said, well, wait a minute, Mr. Deputy Sheriff. This is the black elected officials and clergy that you're speaking with. And while I understand that there's a gang problem, and I appreciate that, I visit prisons all the time. But this particular problem that you're pointing at, while we can help serve it and offer guidance to it, is there any truth, I asked them, to the fact that black gangs from the Bay Area are overwhelming you at Santa Rita? He said, well, no. I mean, there's some. In other words, what Jerry Brown said about Acorn and what OPD said about Acorn is a lie. It's just a lie. Yes, there are young men involved in lifestyle we ought not to be involved in. We got that because there's been over 120 homicides. And many of those homicides are related to conflicts
on the street. Yeah. We understand that. However, Santa Rita Prison is not filled because of that. So the gang problem that he said existed in Santa Rita Prison has very little to do with what they call black gangs.
Well, that means that this, as the national chairman of black police officers said, he said that they're opponents of bias-based policing. In modern language, common language, racial profiling. But the new technical term, I guess, they use to offer that is bias-based policing. Well, if policing is biased, then you're not a recipient of equal justice under the law. These are civil rights violations. Do you all remember Rodney King? Of course we do. And what we are praying is that how they handle the case of Oscar Grant doesn't become Rodney King Part 2. The criminal charges against the law enforcement officers, there were 26 officers, or 27, who were present when Rodney King was beaten. Now, not all 27 beaten. I don't recall the raw number that actually beat him, but four, I believe, were charged. Y'all remember Rodney King? Oh. Now, to me, all 27 should have been charged, which is why in the murder of Oscar Grant, it's not just about Johannes Mesmer. That's a demon that should be thrown under the jail. That's true. That's true. His shooting of Brother Oscar is certainly no accident. You don't pull a gun on an accident. And a law enforcement officer is trained. If you pull and train that gun at anyone, there's no warning with a gun. They don't fire warning shots in police enforcement practitioners any longer. That's in the movies. They fire up stop. They don't do that in reality. In reality, if they pull the gun and point the gun at you, you are a lethal target. Y'all with me now? Okay. When he pulled that gun, he intended to shoot, and there is no such thing in reality as shoot to wound.
Come on.
It's shoot to stop. And the only way they know that they stop you is to kill you. That's why after shooting you, they still handcuff you. Because they feel that you're still a threat to their person after they in fact have shot you. So Mr. Mesley's not in it alone. So when those four officers were charged in the beating of Rodney King, there were 20 other officers watching. Well, what kind of law enforcement officer are you? If I'm being mugged on the street and you're standing around watching, then why pay you $70,000 a year? You ought to be fired if you stand around and watch while I'm mugged on the street and you got a gun on your hip and a club on your hip and a taser on your hip and some cuffs on your hip and a gun in your boot and a gun behind your back and a gun on your right hip if you're right-handed and a gun on your left hip and a shotgun in the car. You got all that weaponry. And you watch me get mugged? So now, who are the other 9 officers that watched the mugging of Oscar Grant? Should they in fact keep their jobs or should they lose their jobs? What say you? Well, sisters and brothers, we're concerned that this case not meet with the Rodney King treatment. Let's get it into another calendar where the jury pool will change. Where it appears that in certain areas, we don't see the same. It's like Joe Louis against Max Schmeller. And you find one group
cheering on one side and the other group cheering on the other side. When the O.J. Simpson case was settled, the criminal case, there were black people cheering all over the country. And there were white people crying all over the country. Is that true?
Yes.
So that only suggests to us that there's a mindset in these jury pools that is racially influenced. So if you move this case out of Alameda County, anywhere outside of Alameda County in this area is predominantly white. Is that true? Now that's not saying that white people can't do justice. Many do. That's why you're here. Right? Okay. Now, the effort will be to get this case out of the county. Now, let's be clear. Nothing has happened inside the courtroom that the judge ought to be frightened of. When I went to the first Mesley hearing, I couldn't even get in. There were about 10 sheriffs at the door. One of the brothers was trying to hold me a seat, and even though there might have been a chair that I could sit in, I couldn't get in the door. At a certain point, they locked down the elevators, and people could not get on the elevator. A couple of sheriffs just wanted to chat with me. They recognized my face, and they let me on the elevator. Now I'm in an elevator with 3 police officers. You ever felt under arrest? Or you get into an elevator and it seemed like the door just won't open fast enough? It was one of those kind of moments. Why am I in this elevator, in this instance, with 3 black officers? They just wanted to cry on somebody's shoulder.
How come y'all don't do this with the other 100 homicides?
I said, brother, you know better. You know better. You know that we're in the community every day in those areas where homicides often occur, dealing with our people. Stop. Stop toting the party line. This is not about ignoring the homicides that occur and only standing when there's a shooting by a law enforcement officer. But quite frankly, any shooting on video, there should be a community outcry. So our desire to prevent this from becoming another Rodney King moment. Rodney King's human and civil rights were violated. The criminal case went in favor of the law enforcement officers. So the federal government had to step in. So those officers walked away from a videotape beating. That's why we know that this is not a slam dunk case in this system. Because this system has already proven that it's not very effective in prosecuting law enforcement officers. They had to go back and file federal charges. And then when they found the conviction in the federal charge, they sent at least one, maybe 2 of the officers up here to a luxurious area, kept them in private isolation, not solitary confinement, but you know, soft to bed, near the flowers, away from the prison shooting range, where they engage a certain class of people that are not sitting in a cell with Pookie or Ray Ray. So these officers, Coon, is that his name? Officer Stacy Coon and others found a luxurious stay here, away from Southern California, away from the state prison system, because they didn't want to be somewhere where there's Bloods and Crips from Florence and Normandy, who knew exactly who they were. So they put them in a luxurious isolation area for a couple of years. And then, of course, you got the one that called, used the N-word in the O.J. case, Furman. He becomes a million book-selling writer. He becomes a commentator for Fox News. So after calling us the N-word on national TV, he becomes a hero to the Republican Party. So let me close this, because we have a special guest
with us this evening. But we are here to secure a political movement that turns the tide of law in the favor of right and just. This is why we're here. So when we said recall the district attorney, is because we know he's never prosecuted successfully any law enforcement officer of this type of wrong deed. Oakland fired 11 officers for reporting abuse and then rehired 7 of them. 7-11. For not reporting. Now, here are those who've been beaten up and setting up and planting evidence. Do you know that any level of force used by a law enforcement officer is allegedly to be reported, or I don't say allegedly, the instructions are to report any act where the officer overcame resistance from you. So in other words, if the officer says, get out the chair, and you don't, and the officer walks up and pulls you up, come with me. You have just been charged with resisting arrest. And the officer is duty bound to report that he laid a hand on you and that you resisted. Now, how many people have been pulled out of their cars or instructed, ordered out of your car by law enforcement before? Every adult male, every person that's been ordered out of the car by law enforcement, please stand up. I'm already up. That's about 90% of the men in the room. And about 95%, 99% of all the men in the room, and a good percentage of the women. Thank you. Now, if they reach for you to maneuver you, there are many that have had locking grips placed on your wrist. Some of them feel as though talking with your hands like I'm doing right now is a threat. Oscar Grant was a threat because he was talking.
And we talk with our hands.
Oh, absolutely. This is a cultural thing. Can't help myself. You know what I'm saying? We can't help ourselves. That's just how we talk. I mean, our English is not as good as it seems. So we sign language a little bit while we're talking. And to some law enforcement officers, you've now threatened them or you've resisted their order. So your hand in the air becomes a reason to lock you in. Now, if you don't let them lock you, man, what you doing? That's resisting arrest. Why are you touching me? That's resisting arrest. Well, these that are called resistant and have included the officer laying their hands on you when you have been alleged to resist are reportable duties of the officers. 9 times out of 10, they don't say anything. They don't say, I took the Negro in the back alley. I slammed his head on the door. I took the dime bag out of his pocket and I smoked it and blew the smoke in the state. They have a drug problem among law enforcement officers. You all know that. Prison systems are full of drugs. The inmates don't bring them in. So this is simply to say, sisters and brothers, that we now have to address the way law enforcement is practiced.
Yes, sir.
When we went to Sacramento for AB 312, and I have just a little information before I bring our guest on, about those assembly people whom we need to pressure quickly to pass AB 312, Assembly Bill 312, is the bill crafted by Assemblyman Tom Amiano,
who, because of his compassionate response to the murder of Oscar Grant, determined that somebody now must force BART to have an oversight process for its law enforcement. One of the things we've learned about BART since the murder of Brother Oscar is they did not even have an investigative team trained to respond to shooting incidents. So to leave it up to the Internal Affairs Department of BART to investigate a shooting, and they had to send someone to school after the shooting to learn how to investigate a shooting, because there's very rarely any kind of shooting on BART. So they're not equipped to deal with shootings at BART.
But they have guns.
They're equipped to chase down those who didn't pay for their BART ticket. That's what they're equipped to do. They're equipped to deal with a little bit of this, students having fun on the train. They're not equipped to deal with homicide issues. Therefore, they weren't qualified to investigate the murder of Oscar Grant, and whatever they turned over to the DA, quite frankly, is suspect. We already know they must not have turned over everything to the DA, because the DA said, I don't have any evidence to bring any charges against anybody else other than Johannes Messner. So we need to now help the state to push through the assembly a bill that mandates oversight over BART. Now, the problem that the bill is having is this. As Jerry Brown told us, there are forces operating that drive the political agenda. Yes. We're not acquainted with these forces because you're not from Orange County. You're not from San Diego County. You're not from Petaluma. You're not from Napa with Mr. Mesley and his family. You're from Oakland. You're from Bayview. You're from the black side of Berkeley. We're from North Richmond. We're from East Palo Alto, where our political voices are not generally respected nor heard. When they make demands from these other areas, the demand is that we want to be made safe from you people. You all with me now?
Yes.
And we need law enforcement that will keep us safe from you people. You all understand, I'm not calling us names, I'm using their language. Well, that being said, law enforcement unions are considered the most powerful lobbies in the state, along with the prison guard union. And so when AB 312 was introduced to committee, I did not know when I went to visit that committee that this was a David and Goliath moment. I didn't know. And when I walked in and read the list of the law enforcement unions that were there to oppose oversight of law enforcement, they included the Los Angeles Sheriff's Union. They included the Riverside PD Union, in addition to the Police Chiefs of California Union, included the California Highway Patrol Union. In addition were the Peace Officers Union and the Police Officers Union. And when we left that meeting, Assemblyman Amiano's staff and his staff told me that those people represented every police officer in the state. So now there's some Democrats on this committee that did not weigh in their vote. But the union doesn't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. You know, when you want to run for high office in any area, you have to at least act like you're tough on crime. So none want to be perceived as being soft on crime. They want the backing of law enforcement unions. Even if you watch our mayor, Delos, he's our brother, I love him, but he makes it a point to say, look at what we've done. We brought the police department up to 803 officers as mandated by the public voting. We've completed the task. Well, they spent $27 million on a handful of officers called problem-solving officers, and they have yet to solve a $1 worth of a problem. And they said that that would be community policing. I have never met a problem-solving officer in the city of Oakland. And I meet officers all the time. So we need to apply pressure to the assembly. We've got about a week to get it done, that they would be made to respond. And I'm hearing from different persons here in the town hall that in this circle of town hall activists are those that are laying pressure on assembly person Nancy Skinner, who's from Assembly District 14. And if you live in or near these areas, we want for you to call, fax, email, text message, otherwise bug Nancy Skinner, letting her to know your support for AB 312. Her area includes Albany, Berkeley, Canyon, East Richmond Heights, El Cerrito, El Sobrante, Emeryville, Kensington, Lafayette, Moraga, must be North Oakland or Oakland Hills, Pleasant Hill, Orinda, Richmond, Rollingwood, San Pablo. Now, I've never heard of Walden. Where's Walden? Maybe that means Walnut Creek. That's assembly person Nancy Skinner. Her district office is right here in Oakland, and I think I read online that her day to visit the office is Monday afternoon. And you'll find her, theoretically, at the LU Harris State Building, 1515 Clay Street, on the 22nd floor. You can call that office. Write this down. Especially if you're from these areas. They have a way of declaring that. They'll ask you your address. And if your address doesn't come from these areas, sometimes they won't talk to you. So if you or your friends or your network of people or your Facebook friends or your tweeted friends, tweet it out there, Facebook it out there, and tell everybody in these areas to call Nancy Skinner, 510-286-1400. Also, Assemblywoman Fianna Ma, who's in the 12th district of the assembly, which includes western San Francisco, northern edge of San Mateo County, Broadmoor, Colma, Daly City, Excelsior District, Golden Gate Park, Ingleside Terrace, Lake Merced to Omi, Ocean Beach, Presidio, Richmond District, Sunset District, west of Twin Peaks, West Porto, and Visitacion Valley. Now, if you're from any of these areas, call this week Assemblywoman Fianna Ma. Now, if you call, you can get the email address. In fact, they all listed online, yellow pages, white pages. District office in San Francisco is at 455 Golden Gate Avenue, Suite 14600. Her number, 415-557-2312. Let's drive, pardon me, Assembly Bill 312 in. But we've got to show these that are elected officials that there is somebody to answer to other than the police. Other than the prison guards. And so the town halls that are brewing in every city, San Francisco, Richmond, Antioch, East Palo Alto, Stockton, Modesto, Oakland, soon East Oakland, are designed to build up this movement so that these who have only been listening, where law enforcement policy is concerned to the police union, the prison union, the police chief union, the highway patrol union. Well, we come to let them know there's a new sheriff in town that they need to pay political attention to. And so I want to thank you for your attention and bring before you a sister of ours who is perhaps one of Oakland's leading activists and voices in the issue of police reform. It's personal with her as it is with all of us, for she is the unfortunate victim. But God is great in his will, and he knows best. But she lost both her husband and her son when law enforcement came to her home because they were concerned about a pit bull on the property. And the conflict that day led to the murder of her husband and son at the hands of Oakland Police Department. Since that time, she has challenged the forces of power to bring real oversight and reform to the city of Oakland as it relates to its policing. And while this is not BART specific, listen to the principles that our sister is sharing of what she hopes to be able to achieve through the Oakland City Council in the very near future. Please join me in receiving to this microphone our sister and activist, Sister Rashida Grenache.